she didn't realize that just by her body language, you know, she was already being off-putting or looked like she was not interested. Having that knowledge and her being able to make those adjustments will automatically give her more success as she moves forward. Because next time she does have interest in someone, she can show that better and be more self-aware, because that's really what dating is about as well.
Before we start this episode, I have a fun announcement about a live event that's coming up. If you are in the LA area, the Southern California area, we are hosting an authentic relating games night, a live event of connection and games from 6 to 9 p.m. on March 16th. At a private residence on the west side of LA. You can find more on Meetup or Eventbrite for tickets. Just Google Authentic Relating Los Angeles Games Night and it should come up. If not, just get me at dearmenpodcast@gmail.com and I will get you that link. And I haven't mentioned this in a while, but I do encourage you to join the Big Sexy Data Set, which is the group of people that I survey occasionally about things. And I have a survey coming up soon. If you're interested in joining, you can just email me at dearmenpodcast@gmail.com and say, add me to the Big Sexy Data Set. And I will do that. We are going to be exploring the topic of bullying and both sides of that topic, both if you've ever been bullied and then also if you've ever been a bully. So I think there's a lot of rich content around that that affects a lot of people and can last for a long time. And there's a lot to say about that. So we're going to do an episode on it. And if you have anything to share there, as well as we're going to do another upcoming episode, will be on religious programming, deprogramming religious programming around sexuality, how to do that, what happens when you do that, what happens when you don't do that, things like that. So would encourage you to join the Big Sexy Data Set. And if you're interested in supporting the podcast, you can always join our Patreon and become a patron of the podcast, which helps us keep it ad-free and available to all and supports me in the production of this. And you can do that just by going to Patreon, Dear Men Podcast. We would love to have you be part of the community. And now on to the episode. Hello, and welcome back to another episode. Happy to have with me today Anika Rashan, who is a matchmaker with 3-Day Rule and a date coach with Ask Anika. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited, Melanie.
So it's interesting because I've been thinking about matchmaking lately, not necessarily in the modern way that we do it, but I was listening to another podcast about how different our lives are now than they ever have been in human history. And for much of human history, we lived in extended family systems, literally lived in small towns or villages or tribes or homes, right? Places where we were around a lot more people, especially family members. And matchmaking was a big part of a lot of different cultures around the world. And that's completely different now. We're living in a postmodern experience of, you know, they call it the post-extended family generation, where we're living a lot more solo lives. And there isn't, you know, we don't have aunties and uncles and grandparents. And some of us do, but that's a minority, especially in the West. I'm mostly talking about Western culture, North America and Europe. But even, you know, I was a Japanese major. I lived in Japan for a while, and it's true in many, many regions around the world. So that was one thing that I think that we think of matchmaking as archaic or old school and, you know, irrelevant, like not relevant for today's times. And so I'm curious to hear many things from you, but if you could tell us a little bit about kind of how you got into matchmaking, and did you have that perspective, that same kind of perspective before you started doing it?
I love that question. And I feel like it's a common one, because I feel like matchmaking is one of those things where You know, when you first hear it, you definitely think, oh, wow, this is a little old school. You know, you may think like this is something that maybe people did, you know, in the past, but do they still do it now? Or maybe you may think of it as like a cultural thing. But for me, you know, I got out of college, you know, being a communications major, and I was looking for something that fit my passion, that kind of spoke to my soul. I was always very into like relationships and like building, you know, community and just giving advice, and trying to find a career path that aligned with that was a little hard. You know, I definitely started in public relations. I worked in event planning. So, and when I say event planning, it was a lot surrounded around weddings and that whole, you know, idea of things. So I love the idea of love. I'm a Libra, you know, all those things. So for me, it almost seemed like, I'm surprised it took me that long to find out that matchmaking was still a thing. But I did have a friend in college, and she actually discovered a matchmaking company, and she told me about it. And she said, I feel like this would be perfect for you. You know, you love, you know, matching people, you love love, you love relationships, you're really good at communicating with people, and just understanding the energy and the aura, you know, of a situation. So why not give it a try? So that was kind of like my first like intro into just knowing that that was something that people were doing, you know, at this day and age. And I found a company, you know, online, and I applied for the job, and that kind of has what kickstarted my matchmaking journey. And then of course, like throughout the journey, like I found other matchmaking companies that I eventually moved to. I'm now currently at 3-Day Rule Matchmaking. But it's been a beautiful journey. And I definitely feel like anyone who has like that passion for people, love building, you know, community relationships, this is definitely like the route to go.
And what do you say when people say, oh, matchmaking, isn't that kind of like old school?
Well, what I tell people is, you know, history, even though we always say like, we don't want history to repeat itself, history always does in some way, shape, or form, but it kind of repeats itself in a new age way. So I feel like when we think of matchmaking, you know, in back in the day, we think of a little bit more like, you don't really have a say in what you're looking for. You're more so just being paired, because it's more of a cultural thing. Nowadays, people have a little bit more say in terms of what they're looking for, and of course, more guidance as well. But I think it's more about trying to make something that seems a little archaic more modern. And if you think about it, think of the other side of things. There's dating apps. Dating apps used to be a concept that no one knew about. And, you know, then it became something that is now currently exhausted. So now people are looking for that next best thing. Sometimes that next best thing is going back and looking at things that have worked in the past.
So yeah, let's talk about it. I've many questions about the process and success rate. How do you measure success? All of that stuff. Can you describe a little bit about what you do at 3-Day Rule? Because it's and then also maybe what you do at Ask Anika. But it's kind of interesting because you're not just working with people; you're working with pairing people with the right matchmaker.
Exactly. So, you know, there's two parts, you know, there's the matchmaking side of things. When you're working as a matchmaker, you know, the whole concept is that, you know, you're basically pairing, you know, two people to have the highest chance of success. Now let's talk about what success means. Success means different things to different people. Some people are looking for just a long-term relationship. Some people are looking for marriage. Some people are looking to have kids. It really ranges. So when I look at success, I look at matchmaking success as the matchmaker has identified someone who fits what their client's needs are, and they have the highest chance of success of having the relationship that they're looking for. Now, what ends up happening past that point, when the matchmaker is no longer involved, of course, that's up to the client and, you know, their match. But our job, of course, is to make sure that we're setting you up for that success. Because at the end of the day, it's all nuance, you know, and people are people. So life happens. But we want to make sure that we're setting you up with the best person possible to have those possibilities. Now, when it comes to what my role is, I did used to work as the matchmaker at 3-Day Rule. And now I work as the matchmaker of the matchmaking team at 3-Day Rule. So what that basically means is I'm the person that does all the intake. So when we do have someone who is interested in being a client, you know, and working with a matchmaker, I'm the first person that you talk to. So I'm getting to know you, getting to know, you know, your personality, what you like to do, your day to day, your past dating history, your must-haves, your deal breakers, and just kind of hear about what your dating goals are in a general sense. And then it's my job to also see, you know, are the things that you're looking for things that, you know, as a company, we are able to provide? Because, you know, of course, we cannot work with everyone as much as we would love to. But we want to make sure that it's a good mutual fit. And if we feel like it is, then, of course, my job at that point is to then pair you with the best matchmaker on the team who we think is the best fit for you. And that is based off of more like a personality type, maybe more like an energy vibe. But we want to make sure, of course, the person that's vetting on your behalf, you would have a great rapport with. And that's kind of what my job is.
So yeah, you did mention that you don't, that matchmaking isn't a fit for everyone. I'm curious, how many folks do you talk to for whom it isn't a fit? I would imagine for most, by the time they're talking to you, it probably is. But what are some signals that it is or isn't a fit?
I would say the only time it would not be a fit is more so when it comes to certain specifications. So one of the things, like I like to say, and I like to bring this up, and yes, I'm kind of talking to women specifically. So a popular thing is women wanting, you know, a particular height preference, for instance. So, and hey, you know, I get it. You know, women always say the taller, the better, the taller, the better. But, you know, the thing is like, at the end of the day, I always say we all shrink anyway. And you want to make sure that you are finding the person that's going to be by your side, that's going to support you, that's going to, you know, has those values and, you know, and those personality traits that carry on throughout time. Because at the end of the day, the physical stuff, even though it is important, it is not the most important thing. So if someone comes to me and they are, you know, 4'11" and they say they can only date men over 6'4", that would not be a fit. You know, for many reasons. One, you know, they're not focusing on the right things. And then two, that also makes the pool smaller in terms of the amount of people that we're even able to reach out to, even if they do have the qualities in terms of personality that we are looking for. So it's about also being open-minded and knowing that you're searching for the right things.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've never had that height preference. I am not a woman who cares in the least about how tall a man is. It's just not important to me. Other things are much more important to me. Mm-hmm. And it's probably worth noting at this point that I considered being a 3-day rule matchmaker years ago and didn't end up going down that route, but I did end up being one of the pool participants. So I don't know if 3-day rule still does this, but back in the day, you're nodding, so then that they probably do. Anyone can become someone that's in the pool for 3-day rule, as far as I understand, and I'm seeing nodding. And that means that you become one of the people that matchmakers can match someone with. So you're in the pool of participants. And I think I remember filling out like a questionnaire. There were some questions and I believe that one of the questions was, you know, around what I was looking for, like, who are you looking for? What is your ideal match so that you can see if there's a fit? And I remember putting absolutely positively, the most important thing to me is he doing personal growth? Mm-hmm. Is he doing personal growth work? Is he self-aware? Is he doing the work? And I feel like I remember someone saying, what does it mean exactly? Okay. And I just listed like 10 things, like therapy, somatic therapy, men's work, breath work, you know, yoga, psychodrama, like all of these different things, is like literally consciousness work, anything around relationships, relating, attachment, just like, is he aware of these kinds of things? So I am curious to hear from you, you know, what are common must-haves and deal breakers? And I have many questions in one, so we'll try to take this slowly. What are common must-haves and deal breakers? Do those differ by sex? And do you mostly work with hetero people, or men who have sex with women have sex with men, or do you also work with queer folks? And do you find a difference there as well?
Yes. So, well, first I want to take it back a little bit, because I love that you said, you know, that height preference was never, you know, a big thing for you. Because the thing is I want to tell women out there are so many great men. Women say, well, where are all the great men? And I'm like, some of them are under 6 foot tall. That's where they are. So it's like, if you, you know, just open your mind up to things that at the end of the day really are not that important, you'll find that there are a lot more options out there. Because people say all the time, where are the options? But they're out there. So I just wanted to let people know that. And then kind of getting into your question. So what are some of the top, you know, I guess, most popular must-haves for, let's start with women. I would say for women, you know, I would say one of the top most popular must-haves is definitely career. So stable in their career, driven, career-oriented. I would say someone who has emotional intelligence, that's really important to them. And then I would say the third thing is family-oriented. What I do hear a lot of the time is, you know, women talk about their past dating experiences and what they have come from, unfortunately, has been, you know, situations where they are looking for something serious. They do want to get married. Maybe they want to have kids, maybe not, but they do want that relationship oriented mentality. And that's what they're not finding right now. Mind you, I think that they're also maybe looking in the wrong places. They're talking about coming from the dating apps. They're saying that men are only wanting sex. They're saying that men are only wanting things that are casual, and they're looking for more intentional daters. So I would say those are definitely the three top must-have things. When it comes to men, does it differ? A little bit, but I would say in a general sense, like, men do like independent women. They do. And when I say independent, I don't necessarily mean an alpha female. I just mean someone who has, you know, something going on, someone who's passionate about something in their life. They don't necessarily have to be the most career driven, but they have to be passionate about something. I would say, someone who, you know, being family oriented, I would say it's a 50-50 thing, because it really, again, depends on the person. So I do have men that kind of come to the table and they're very much like, I want to get married, I want to have kids. But I think that they're also just looking for someone who's intellectually curious. So they're always looking for someone who, like, is willing to, you know, be fun, have, you know, be curious, be adventurous. So they're definitely looking for, like, that spark, that vibrant. And I would also say someone who's optimistic. So, like, that positive, you know, optimistic personality, I feel like a lot of the time, and I guess realistically, we can kind of look at how the world is shaped today, you know, in a lot of these, like, you know, high paying careers, you know, in finance and things like that. These men are kind of like, they have a particular type of personality when they're at work. And when they want to come home, they want that softness, and they want to feel that from their partner. And they also want to have that positivity. So I would say, like, you know, that positive, lighthearted, easygoing personality to kind of comfort them when they're at home. I do see that a lot. But I would say the most common thing between both sides, I would say it's definitely that intellectual curiosity and that emotional intelligence for both sides. And when you ask me about the question of, you know, do we work with just heterosexuals? Do we work with homosexuals as well? We work with both, you know, so I think, which I think is great, you know, so regardless if you are, you know, a man looking for another man or a man looking for a woman or vice versa, you know, we welcome you to of course, come on, you know, on the team, and we would love to work with you as a client.
And I'm guessing that it's probably 90-10 that most of your clients are hetero and 10% or fewer are queer. Is that around?
To be honest with you, I don't know the percentage, but I would definitely say it's, you know, more heterosexuals than homosexuals that we work with, in terms of who comes to 3-Day Rule in terms of inquiring. But in terms of people that end up, you know, working with us as clientele, you know, I would say it's across the board, you know, pretty average, that anyone who is open enough, we have no problem working with them, regardless of what they're looking for in terms of, like, their, you know, their sexual preference.
Yeah, it's also interesting because, you know, I'm not sure how much you can say about pricing, but it's a certain kind of person that's going to be able to afford, you know, several thousand dollars for matchmaking. Like, most people aren't necessarily going to be able to do that. And so, you know, you mentioned, like, a few career, not trajectories, what are they called? Industries, including finance. And I would say, most of the clients that I work with are not in careers like that. They're doing other things with their lives, and they aren't necessarily going to invest in something like matchmaking. But I'm curious to hear, because you do so many intakes, you're hearing from lots and lots of people. I'm curious if my story is that people are fed up, that they get fed up. They're like, I'm sick of the fucking apps. Like, I can't with the apps anymore.
And that's how they say it too.
Okay. Yeah. That would be my guess, is like, I'm tired of it. It's time consuming. It's not working. My story is that it just takes so much time and effort and energy. And that when you are a working professional, it's like, I would love to outsource this. Like, just get me on dates with people that are a good fit for me so that I can focus on other things. Is that a lot of what you're hearing?
You know, to be honest with you, like, yes, we do tend to work with a lot of, like, you know, middle to high level executives. But to be honest with you, like, I have also signed someone who, you know, makes $30,000 a year, like, you know, let's say, and, you know, they are really just intentional about wanting a relationship, and either they're saving up for it, or they have a family member that doesn't mind gifting it to them. So I've seen so many unique situations, to be completely honest with you, which is beautiful, because I mean, at the end of the day, like, you don't want price to be the only thing that keeps someone from, you know, finding another intentional way to date. So, I mean, I have seen people, you know, who of course are in one particular price bracket. And then I've also seen people who maybe, you know, are in a completely different industry and they still find ways to afford it. But then I also, you know, look at it like this. Yes, matchmaking is not for everyone, but there are other options there. I always tell people it's really about putting yourself out there. Like you mentioned, like the dating apps, they are very exhausting. I call it swipe exhaustion because it is real. But there are other ways, you know, if maybe financially matchmaking is not for you, you can look into date coaching. You can look into someone doing like a profile revamp for you. So there's other options and to still be intentional about your dating life and still make it a priority.
Absolutely. And I'm curious, you know, what percentage of folks that you're working with are divorced? So a lot of our guys are divorced or potentially going to be divorced. And I would imagine that's a pretty significant population for you. And then what's the kind of average age range that you're working with?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, like, to be honest with you, maybe like anywhere between like 35 to 40%, you know, are divorced, because in terms of age, I mean, the youngest person I've ever, you know, signed was 21. The oldest person, they were in their 70s. So pretty wide range. But I would say like the average meat and potatoes, like, you know, around like that 30 to like 60, late 60s is kind of like where like that the majority of people kind of come from. So you're either getting people that are in that stage where everyone around them is getting married and, you know, kind of moving on with their life on like the younger end. And then maybe on the other side of things, like, you know, people have gotten out of marriages and they're like, we don't know how to start. We don't know where to go. And we don't know how to go about doing this. And then you maybe have people at, you know, the older end of things. And they're like, I just am looking for like a life partner to share like my life with. I want to travel. You know, I just want someone to enjoy the rest of my time here, you know, and we find people like that too. So it really is like, and that's the beautiful thing is like, I think that that's my favorite part about matchmaking and doing the intake is that there's not just one type of person that we can help. And there's not just one type of person that's interested in matchmaking. It's really so many different people from so many different backgrounds.
So let's talk about success rates. I'm sure that you track a lot of this. And I'm recalling, you know, a different matchmaking company that I was in touch with at one point, and they said success rate tends to increase over time, meaning as your matchmaker gets to know you and as the matches improve and quote unquote improve in quality, then there's more of a success rate. And I think at that point, at that company, they sold packages. So you could do 6 matches or you could do 12 matches, 3, 6, 9, 12, something like that. And it was about a match a month. So yeah. I'm curious if you have that kind of timeline, if that's how you set it up as well. And then do you find that by match 12, most people are finding a fit? I mean, how do you measure success how does 3-day rule do it?
Yeah. So, I mean, again, when it comes to success, like success means different things to everyone, right? And then there's also like in terms of the privacy aspect of it. So like there's a success that we do have on success stories. Like we were just on CBS News, like on Valentine's Day, like promoting one of our success stories. But, you know, those are people that want to share that. There's twice as many success stories that actually do happen, but they are more personal about it, which is understandable because that's how some people are. And they're definitely more than, you know, willing to want to keep that close to the chest. You know, when it comes to like the cadence of the matches and how that works, we don't offer anything that's 12 months necessarily, but we do have a 3-month package. You know, our most popular packages are 3 months or 6 months. And that cadence is about a match a month. We do find more success on average with, you know, the 6-month membership. Why? Because again, like, you're having more time for the matchmaker to get to know you. You're kind of figuring out more of what you want. And then at the end of the day, dating really is a numbers game, right? So whether you're using a matchmaking service or whether you're just dating on the apps, the more dates you go on, the more time you spend on the apps, the more conversations you have, the higher chance that you're actually going to find someone who you would like to move forward with.
Yes. And it's also about intention and openness. And so I wonder if that's also part of why a little bit more time might help, because, you know, I think there's a, and I'm curious how you go about it. I would imagine that part of what the matchmaker is working with the person is curiosity, openness, intention setting, that kind of thing. Can you speak a little bit to, you know, how it works with the matchmaker? What are they talking about with the client for an hour or however long their sessions are? And for many people, what I've noticed is that they haven't actually sat down and gotten specific about what they're looking for and how they want to, particularly how they want to feel with a partner. They think that they know, but they haven't actually drilled down. So I wonder if part of the success is this, is just talking about it with someone with intention.
Mm-hmm. You hit the nail right on the head with that, because it's definitely about just talking it all out. I think that, I think that one of the most popular things that I hear after, you know, probably around the end of like my initial intake call is, wow, I never really thought about relationships like this before. Or, wow, I've actually learned a lot about myself. Or, you know what? I actually need more time to think about that because I never sat and thought about that. And they can be simple questions as, you know, what are your top most important things that you're looking for? Or what are some personality traits that you feel like you vibe really well with? Or what do you think about gender role dynamics? Or, you know, it can even be like, you know, why do you feel like it's hard for you to date? What are some positive things that you bring to the table? What are some negative things that, you know, maybe make it hard for you to date people or have dated people in the past? So all these questions that we're asking them, it really is kind of like, I've even had many people say to me before, I've gotten more deeper with you than I've gotten with my therapist. And I've been with my therapist for years. So that just already tells me that we're asking thought-provoking questions that's getting people to think more deeply about not only just what they want, because this is not, you know, like a build a man or build a woman. And I always tell people that, because back in the day when I was like 16 years old, you know, like over 2 decades ago, I did work at Build-A-Bear. And that is kind of like the first thing I think about. And I'm like, this is not a service where you're just kind of like creating the perfect person, because nobody is perfect. It's about finding the person that's most complimentary to you and merging basically like two different personalities and hoping that those two personalities can, you know, be in harmony together as they move forward and learn. Because as you know, people do change, people do evolve, and being open-minded to that fact. So it is helping people kind of like understand more about not only what they want, but who they are. And I think that to me is probably the biggest part of just being a matchmaker, being a coach, being in the dating and relationship space, is kind of taking people out of that thought process of I want, I want, I want. And it's more about like, you know, I need, or this would, you know, be positive in my life, or I could bring this to a relationship. So I think it's about kind of changing the question, and that's kind of will help people find more compatibility as they move forward in their dating experiences.
And then talk to me about, I'm curious about the dating debrief. So after someone finds a match, after a matchmaker finds a match for someone, they set them up on the date, then there's the debrief afterwards. I'm imagining that they only debrief with their client. Do they? Or do they also debrief with the other person?
They debrief with both. So the client as well as the person that we match them with. Because, okay, you know, it's great to have both sides, right? Because again, like, you know, there's her side, his side, you know, then the truth. So sometimes, you know, I think what I noticed when I was working on the matchmaking team was I had once a client who went on a date and she gave me her date feedback and she said, you know, oh, I think it was great, but you know, I'm not really sure. I would love to see him again, but I want to see what he says. And then I get the, you know, date feedback from the match and the gentleman says, I mean, I would like to see her again, but it seemed like she really wasn't interested at all. You know, she kind of sat back, you know, she had her arms folded, like her body language just was not telling me that she was interested. But I mean, if she's interested in going out again, like that's great. But I really did not get those vibes. So just being able to understand that she didn't realize that just by her body language, you know, she was already being off-putting or looked like she was not interested. Having that knowledge and her being able to make those adjustments will automatically give her more success as she moves forward. Because next time she does have interest in someone, she can show that better and be more self-aware, because that's really what dating is about as well.
And tell me about attraction. So I think that, you know, that is an X factor, and it's something that we definitely work on with a lot of our men around being able to generate attraction and, you know, being in their bodies and just bringing some heat on a date. I'm curious, you know, how many times is it that, oh, he was really great or she was really great, but I just wasn't feeling the spark? Like, I would imagine that's a top problem in terms of mismatch. Is that true? And what are the other sort of top problems?
I mean, to be honest with you, I wouldn't necessarily call it a top problem, because we definitely do our best to, you know, ask for like screenshots or images of people that they're attracted to, just so we kind of have an idea of what we're looking for, you know, or people that they've dated in the past. But at the end of the day, you know, it is our job to explain to them that, you know, while you're going through this program, it is likely that we're going to set you up with someone who you may not have swiped right on your own. But that's also like the beauty of this program. Clearly what you were doing before was not working for you. So we're here to kind of like open your mind and just like have you be a little bit more open-minded, you know, thought process when it comes to like a potential match and what you're attracted to. We're not here to change your mind. We just want to open it a little bit. So I wouldn't necessarily call it a big problem, because we definitely make sure to kind of explain that and to kind of have those conversations before they even go through the process. So it already is there. I'm not going to say we never have gotten pushback, but because that's normal, you know. I think that people who are even swiping on the dating apps, they say this person looks like XYZ in a picture. And then when I saw them on a date, that's not what I was looking for. But I think, again, it kind of goes back to like, really, what's the most important thing? You know, does someone having light brown hair versus dark brown hair, is that really a deal breaker for you? You know, is someone who has facial hair, but you like a cleaner shade, is that really a deal breaker for you? Because hair can be removed. So it's like finding the things that you're kind of like almost sticking on that aren't really that important, and kind of getting past that and seeing like, is this person actually a compatible match? You know, or are you just finding something that makes them not compatible with something that is just tangible and can be changed?
Let's go back to success rates. So we didn't really complete like the loop on that, but I'm curious to hear do you have statistics? Like what percentage of people are finding what they were looking for in doing this?
Yeah, I mean, we don't actually give away like any numbers, to be completely honest with you. And the reason why we don't do that is because realistically, like I was saying before, it's like we have, you know, the people that are willing to, you know, come forward and talk about their success. And then all the stories that, you know, we just have, I guess you can say, back of house, you know, that we can't really speak on. So there really is no numbers per se, but we always definitely love to highlight all of our successes. So that's why I always tell people, you know, look at the, you know, the reviews, look at the website, you know, look at all of our features, you know, look at Google reviews, all those things that are people coming back to tell their story. Because to me, numbers mean one thing, but someone telling a story and sharing their experience, that to me is going to give me a little bit more concrete evidence of, does this work or does this work for someone like me? So, because anyone can say a number, but where's the actual story? You know, how have people moved forward? And again, you know, success rate can mean one thing in terms of how great is the quality of the match, or did those people end up getting married down the line?
Okay, well, so do you have any one of my questions here is, what are some memorable matches that you've made, or I guess know about, since you're working more with the matchmaking team at this point? sort of like fun stories or memorable matches. Do you have any you can talk about?
Yeah, so there's one, and it constantly, well, there's two. Well, and this is kind of what I mean by two different types of success. So one success story that I like to think about, I'm not going to say any names, but one of my old clients, he signed up for a 6-month membership. He was very great. You know, he lived in Philadelphia area. He went through the whole, you know, 6-month program, and he liked the experience and everything, but he did not find someone that he was going to be in a long-term relationship with after the membership. But, you know, we stayed in contact over the next few years. And then he ended up finding someone just through a friend of his. And he still, you know, reached out to me every month to give me updates, to let me know how things were going. They had a little, you know, mishap. They broke up for a month because of some, you know, little issue of miscommunication. And then they got back together. But every single time he called me, I walked him through each scenario. And I was just there to support him through that. And it had nothing to do with any matches that we were currently matching him with, because again, his membership was over. But just having him have that success in finding someone, you know, he's very much like, I want to, you know, invite you to my wedding, you know, regardless if it's the person that I met through 3D Rule or not, because you were always there for me. So to me, that's success. Someone finding someone is success. It doesn't have to be through the company that I work for. It doesn't have to be, you know, through a service that I provide. It's more so just the guidance that I give and knowing that I can support someone in a space where they can find what they're looking for. That's success to me. So that's one type of success. Another type of success is another gentleman also in the Philadelphia area, actually. And he had a 3-month membership. And this kind of goes back to why having, you know, going on these dates and having feedback is really important, because his issue when he came to us was, I don't know why I can't get past a second date. So I was like, okay, why can't you get past the second date? So, you know, he would go on the first date. He went on the first date with the first match. And she said he was very nice, but nothing there. Same thing happened with the second date. Very nice, nothing there. He was getting a little frustrated because he was like, I always get this feedback. What's happening? So I dug a little deeper, and because again, you know, everyone gets a little weird about giving feedback because they don't want to hurt the other person's feelings. But I really needed to get to the bottom of what was wrong, because this guy was great. And he was very intentional about dating. So, you know, I kind of did a little bit of a circle back around. I said, is there anything that you can tell me, anything that he specifically did? Is it an energy thing? Is it an aura thing? Why did you decide not to move forward with this gentleman if you said he was great? And then what they all said to me was, he was a great listener, but he did not speak. And I said, okay, give me more information about that. And they said that, you know, he was great at listening. You know, he seemed very intent. You know, his eyes were always like very wide and he was like smiling and everything like that. But he never asked me any questions. So I went back to him and I kind of gave him that feedback, you know, in a very strategic way. And I asked him, you know, what was up with that? And he said, well, I read an article that said men don't listen. So I thought that when I go out on dates, I should listen more. So I explained to him, yes, you should, but that does not mean don't speak. So his only issue was that he was being very intentional with listening, but almost so in his head that all he did was sit and listen to a woman speak. But then it made her feel as though he didn't want to learn anything about her. And he was just kind of sitting there and just basically listening. And then I kind of gave him that feedback. We did a mock date, which I thought was a great exercise. You know, I kind of showed, I said, this is how you engage in a conversation, you know, and listen at the same time, but then also be prompted to ask questions. And we gave him a bonus match. And the bonus match is actually the person that he ended up proposing to a year later, and they're going to be getting married. So just that feedback was the key for him to find his success. So that was a whole different type of success, but that was also like very emotional for me. I actually cried when I got the email, because he let me know it, like, I think it was a few hours after he actually did it. So that was really emotional for me to just know that, like, I definitely changed someone's life in that way. But I think it also just kind of goes to show, like, he was very intentional and his intentions were good. He was getting advice, you know, offline and didn't know how to actually, you know, put that into his normal life. But being able to have someone to kind of work that through with allowed him to like find his person, which I'm very happy for him. So excited for the couple and, you know, all they have to come in the future.
Well, that's really special. Yeah, I've also been invited to the weddings of people that I've worked with. And that's one of the most Oh, meaningful. And just, yeah, it's a really special feeling to know that we are involved in something that profound for people. And I'm absolutely riveted by this part of the conversation because of the feedback part. So this is, you know, part of the reason that men come and work with me is because of a little bit of what you're talking about, of like, this isn't working for me and I'm not sure why, or I don't want to do that past that relationship that I just did. I want something different, or I want something different in my marriage, but what I'm doing right now isn't working. It's not working and I want it to be different. And it's so interesting because I think we all have such a deep-rooted fear of asking each other for feedback because we are, well, sometimes we're afraid of what someone's going to say. So I'm thinking about this guy, for example. If you weren't in the picture, in dating, what often happens is he goes on the first date, goes well, he goes to ask her out for the second date, and she says, I think we should just be friends. Thanks so much. I had a great time, and I'm just not feeling what I need to feel. And then there's nothing else. There's no actual feedback about why. And sometimes with my men, sometimes I will encourage them to ask respectfully, like, I would love to know more. Can you share with me what, you know, what you weren't feeling or whatever? And most of the time, when you ask in the right way, people will open up. And that's not true of just dating. That's true in the world. But what happens is, the vast majority of the time, we don't ask. We just don't ask. We just assume that if we were to ask, it would be prying, or we're a little bit afraid of what we're going to hear or whatever. And it's really, really scary to proactively share. So those women would never have proactively shared. And in fact, they didn't even proactively share with you, who is a third party that, you know, doesn't have skin in the game in the same way as the man they were just on the date with, but it still took you asking again and asking in a certain way and making it really safe for them to share. I think there's something profound about that. And it's part of why, part of what I'm hearing is that the coaching aspect of what you're describing is that you're actually getting real feedback from people that these people are going on real dates with. And then they can make adjustments if they want or not based on that feedback. Whereas in the real world, there is no third party. If you're going to get that kind of feedback, you're going to have to ask. And that requires a lot of emotional intelligence and skill. And even if you ask in the right way, sometimes it's still going to be scary for someone to share, right? It's still going to be like, yeah, it's what I said. Like I thought our conversation was great. And I wasn't feeling the chemistry, right? The chemistry or the sparks. Like that's something that we get in our work sometimes is that, wow, I got along with you really well, but I wasn't feeling the sparks. And it's like, that has to be online. There has to be you have to be able to generate some of that in order to create a romantic relationship that includes sex, right? Like that's exactly part of the equation, but it can be so hard when you're like, how do I do that? I don't know how to do that. And so, yeah, I find that part really interesting about the feedback. And I noted what you said about, you know, I went back and told him strategically, which means with love and care. But I feel like that was a life-changing moment for him.
Yeah.
That he was able to get that feedback. And I'm curious if, you know, what kinds of other feedback have you had to deliver to people that feels memorable in your world?
Yeah. So before I actually get into that, just another note to that story. The reason why I think it also is like one of my favorite stories to tell is because the person he ended up proposing to, they actually met before he even signed up, you know, for, you know, matchmaking or anything like that. It was a few years prior. And they went on a date. I think they met on a dating app and the date was fine. I think they went on maybe one or two dates, but she was just like, he was nice. And then it just kind of like dissipated. Lo and behold, a year and a half later, he signs up. That was his bonus match. She happened to be the last person he met with after all of that feedback. So realistically, it's like, I could have set them up again. She could have said, wow, he's the same great guy, but doesn't ask questions. You know, he just listens there and smiles at me. And it could have just went the same way. But again, you're right. It's like that feedback is just so important because I think that, you know, in any aspect of life, being able to be in a space where you do take that feedback and just be a little bit more self-aware of how you come off can really just really make waves in your life. Because it definitely did with that client. In terms of other feedback, I mean, I think that the hardest part of being on the matchmaking side was getting feedback that was not so great. You know, maybe someone went on a date and they're like, you know, no way, shape in hell, am I going to go on this person on a date with this person again? They were not my type physically, or you know, they were very much like this and on this side political party or whatever may have you. The ways that we handle that, again, you have to just kind of be really strategic about it, you know. And it really is like if it has to do with like a physical appearance and it's your client, or even if it's the match, because at the end of the day, both people have feelings. You're really kind of just going back and saying like, you know, they really enjoyed like, you know, getting to know you and having that time on the date. Like, however, like there was not enough of a romantic connection for them to want to continue to move forward and see you again. And then that way it's like they can, of course, kind of see like, okay, like clearly romantic connection means like the attraction wasn't necessarily there, but you're not saying like they did not like the way you looked. Because at the end of the day, like, again, we all have feelings and you want to make sure that you're still building the confidence while still also letting them know what the reality of the situation is. So I would say those are probably like the hardest type of feedback to give is just when someone just is not into like someone's physical look, or if someone just doesn't like something that someone cannot change. So those are probably say the hardest, but we still figure out a way to, you know, navigate them and move forward through them. Because as long as you do it with kindness and you kind of look at it as how would I like to be told this news, you can figure out the best way to, of course, say it to your client.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because in this scenario, there is that third party that's mediating versus in the real world, we're doing it ourselves and with as much care as we can. But it's, I think part of why ghosting is a thing is because many people lack communication skills and don't know how to say the difficult things. And that's part of what I'm passionate about is helping people to say the difficult things and be brave and be honest. And, you know, that is, I think, also one of the most gratifying parts of my work is working with men around, particularly around generating attraction. And when it's working, once they've worked on it and it's working, they're like, wow, this is easier. And I am getting more yeses. And I'm actually getting approached sometimes now. That never used to happen to me. Or I'm finding it easier and it's flowing, you know. And when they have their first successes, or I've worked with multiple men who've never had sex before and then they have sex for the first time, or, you know, they've never been in a serious relationship and they get into one, or they've never been with a woman where it felt as easy, where they were like, wow, this is just a lot easier. It's so gratifying. It's like, yeah, personal growth works if you work it. It's like, it actually does work. So it's kind of like, I would imagine a fitness coach or something where people are like, hey, check it out, I have abs now. And you're like, yeah, if you do. It's not exactly like that because there's more involved, but right. But it's very inspiring. It's inspiring.
It is.
And I imagine it would be the same here, where you're giving people adjustments, like the woman with the more open body language, or, you know, it's funny too, especially because in my experience and anecdotally, you know, there are actually many, many men who talk too much during dates, right? They're trying to qualify themselves. They're trying to sort of show that they're worth seeing again. And so they talk too much. So it's so interesting that you gave an example of a man who was more silent listening, because I think I have actually, I'm like, shit, was I the person who wrote that article? Because I definitely wrote an article about how many women I knew who said, I didn't want to go on another date with him because I felt invisible. Mm. Because when he was talking that much, I didn't feel seen or known. And it's so sad because in actuality, a lot of those men wanted to see her again. That's why he was talking so much, was because he wanted to qualify himself. He was trying really hard. And so I am curious if that is some feedback that you've gotten sometimes on dates, or if like a man's nervous. I think sometimes when he actually really likes her, that's when he talks more.
Yeah.
Do you mean that at all?
Yes. And I also think like another thing that kind of comes up is like the momentum. And I think that that's another good thing about having like that third party person as well, is, and that can be on, you know, the male or the female side, but in a general scope of things, you know, I do feel like a lot of women do expect maybe the men to initiate the next date or date number two. And I do hear a lot of men saying, well, if she likes me, wouldn't she like let me know in some way, shape, or form? There's just a lot of miscommunication there, because at the end of the day, like, regardless if you're the male or the female, you just want to be able to let the other person know and the other party know that you are interested and you would like to see them again, and everything else will flow naturally, as it should. But if no one says anything, then the momentum dies. And it's sad to see that so many possible relationships that could be something so beautiful end up dying because there's no momentum there. So, I mean, there's always like the, you know, wait 3 days before you reach out to someone, wait 3 days before you let them know you had a good time or you set up another date or that you just enjoyed their company. And it's like, why not just let them know at the end of the date? I had a great time. So it kind of goes back to like being okay with like putting yourself out there. And I think, you know, we are in this really weird stage where people are so guarded and they want to guard their hearts so much, men and women, that's kind of, we're getting into this space where everyone is stale and no one wants to be open. No one wants to be vulnerable. So everyone stays in a stale place. And then everyone wonders why we are all in this weird stage of people not being able to move forward with like finding relationships in this day and age. And it's just because I feel like everybody is so vulnerable or are so scared to be vulnerable that they in turn don't speak up with what they want. And there's nothing wrong with that. Will the person feel the same way? Maybe, maybe not. But how do you know if you don't ask? How do you know if you don't say it? So my whole thing is like, you know, have that confidence, you know, speak up. And the only thing that can come from it is clarity.
Yeah, that's a good point. And, you know, we work a lot with our clients on leading with vulnerability. And again, it's so gratifying because time after time we hear them say, this is working. Like, this is, that shit works. I'm telling you, the responses that I'm getting and the ways that I'm showing up in the world and deeper relationships, better, not just better romantic relationships, but that's definitely true. Deeper relationships with their children, with their spouses, if they're married, with their colleagues, with their friends, like leading with vulnerability is very effective. And it doesn't always mean that you get the outcome that you're looking for, but it helps you sort the people in your life. This person can go deep, this person can't. And when you want more depth and connection in your life, which I would say most of our clients do, leading with vulnerability is part of the way that you get there. And it's really efficient, right? It's like really efficient. And you have control over it. It's not something you have to wait for, something that comes from the outside. So I did want to just, you know, say quickly that, yeah, I do think it's funny that the name of the company is 3-Day Rule. And I wanted to just briefly ask you about that, because to me, that's archaic. To me, that's like 3 days in the modern world. Like, if I went on a date on a Saturday and didn't hear from the guy until Tuesday, I would think that was weird. Like, to me, it would be, I want to hear, I want to know, like you said, I want to know that you can come towards me. I want to know that you can claim me. I want to know that, you know, and I'll do my part, right? Like, I'll definitely drop something like, it was really fun, I had a great time. I'm definitely not going to wait till Tuesday to do that either. Like, I'm going to jump on that, you know, to let you know, hey, I'm a yes over here. Yes. And so if you want to come towards me, like, I'm available. And I think there's something that's, you know, there's a tricky thing that's going on in general around gender roles and norms, which is, I think as a culture, we want to think that we don't have them anymore, but we still do. And there is a lot of, you know, talk about polarity in my work, which is that dance between, you know, alpha and omega, masculine and feminine, whatever words you want to call it, which we all have both energies inside us. And there is a certain sort of, there is a truth that a lot of people that embody omega want to feel claimed. They want to feel desired. They want to feel seen. They want to feel pursued. And it doesn't mean they have to be in that role all the time, but especially at the beginning, a lot of the women that I know that date men, we want to feel that energy coming towards us. We want to feel desired. We want to feel claimed. And so if, you know, there's this holding back thing that's happening, then that's hard. But I also think there is something to dropping a handkerchief, like letting someone know, yes, like, hey, I'm over here and I'm a yes. Hey, I'm over here and I'm available. And so I'm seeing a lot of vigorous nodding. You can't see because you're listening to this. Yeah, I'm curious because you also do date coaching. I would imagine that that is part of what you are coaching, let's say, women who date men on is how to be available, how to be a yes, how to be a little bit more vocal and more obvious and more of like, hey, I'm over here and I am going to say yes to you, because it's so intimidating for so many of my men to approach women. They are genuinely scared of a drink being thrown in their face or being called a pervert, or just there's a lot of fear and shame around sexuality and dating and relationships, especially in the US. And I've lived a lot of places in the world, so I can speak with some authority. It is genuinely scary for a lot of men. It's like, I don't know how she's going to respond. I don't know what's going to happen, and I don't want to be shamed. So yeah, I'm curious about, you know, a little bit of how you coach men who date women and women who date men around this particular.
For sure. I mean, to be honest with you, that's a pretty popular topic, you know, to be completely honest, because, you know, like you, I lived in Asia for 3 years, in Thailand for two and Vietnam for one. And the culture, I would say, it's interesting because I have seen a stark difference in terms of like the way that women approach men. There's a little bit more of that masculine energy there in terms of like, they have no problem going up to a gentleman and putting themselves out there, or, you know, asking for the date or just letting them know that they're available. Of course, you know, in the United States, that's not really how we see things for the most part. There, women are definitely looking to be pursued more, but I always let women know you can be pursued, but still let someone know that you're holding open the space. You know, you can still do both. And it's like, how do you do both? And it's like, you just mentioned it before. It's like dropping a handkerchief. It's like, it doesn't necessarily mean like you're the person that says, hey, so this is when the date's going to be and I'm planning it and I'm taking over the whole planning that you would want the gentleman to do. But you can also say, you know what, I heard about a really fun concert that's happening this weekend. Or you can even say, I'm free this weekend. Just open the door. Let them know that you are interested, because it is a shame, because I do see a lot of women that they wonder why they're not being approached, but they don't have an approached aura about them, approachable aura about them. So it's like, you have to hold the space and you have to be someone who is giving that light that makes you approachable, because I have seen it. I have been out and I have seen, you know, women who are very nasty, you know, they're with their friends and like a guy will come up and let's say like, she's not interested in the gentleman. Instead of just saying like, oh, thank you very much, like, you know, I'm not interested, but I really appreciate it, like they will maybe respond something nasty. And that does not really help with that, you know, the gentleman's confidence or just his mindset on women in terms of how to walk up to women and put himself, you know, out in a space of dating. So it's like, how do we kind of close that gap of men not wanting to approach anymore that women tend to complain about, and then women feeling like men don't approach at all, which they also complain about. And it's like, men, you can still do it, but women, you have to create a space where men feel comfortable to do that. And so I feel like that, to be honest with you, from my point of view, is a lot of work on the feminine side, on the female side, talking to women about holding open that space. You know, you can't put everything on someone else. And it's like, if you're someone who is allowing yourself to be approached and you're responding kindly, you're being open and honest, you're being strategic about your answers, then you really wouldn't have as many of those issues, because you would be giving that energy and that aura of being someone who seems like they can be approachable. But if you're not like that, then I of course, you're not going to be approached that much. So I definitely think it's a situation of, yes, you know, there's a little bit of give and take there. And that's kind of how relationships are anyway. And you would have to understand that once you got into a relationship, that things are not always going to be 50-50. Sometimes they're going to be 90-10, sometimes 100-0. But at the end of the day, you have to understand that it's never just going to be fully on someone or the other person. And that's the same thing when you're in the vetting process of like trying to find someone to date to. So it definitely is about like, when I'm coaching my clients, specifically the female clients, it's more so like, it's okay, you can still be in your feminine, but still also show assertiveness in terms of like, hey, I'm ready, I'm out here, and I'm willing to be approached. And for men, it's about building that confidence. Like, just because you had a bad experience doesn't mean every female is going to respond to you in that same manner.
It's brave. Dating is so brave.
It is.
Yes, it strikes me again and again. And it's not just brave in dating either. I think that being in relationship, being in romantic relationship, and really being in the game is also brave, right? Leading with vulnerability shows up just as much in committed relationships. And in our work, I'd say we work with at least as many committed men as single men. And there's a lot of bravery in deepening in a marriage or, you know, developing more closeness or, you know, in your sex life. It's like, that's where a lot of the aliveness is in those brave spaces. And yeah, I would imagine that in your work in dating coaching, that's a lot of what it is helping people to be brave.
I always tell people, I'm like, lead by example as well. Like, even if we're talking about someone who's already in a relationship. So if I'm talking to one of my clients, you know, and I'm date coaching and they're in a state where they are having some issues within their relationship, feeling as though their partner is not that vulnerable, I said, you know, lead by example. Show them that you can be vulnerable. If you can be vulnerable, it will make them feel like they're in a space where they can be vulnerable. Does that always work? Does that always allow the other person to be vulnerable to the amount that you want? Maybe, maybe not. But at least you know that you're being your true self and you're doing everything that you can to be able to open up that relationship to hopefully get to a deeper level of what you're looking for.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Lead by example, lead with vulnerability. And learning how to do that is an art that's very much worth learning, because it serves you beyond just this arena. I've seen it again and again that it really serves you in all places in your life. And it opens up a lot of possibilities that felt shallow or stale or stagnant before. It just makes everything kind of like high def, like more vibrant, more colorful, just more aliveness.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Well, that feels like a great place to wrap. Where can people find you? Because you do two things, right? You do the 3-day rule stuff, but you also do the date coaching with your own brand. And then just to close the loop, because we never actually closed it, 3-day rule, does 3-day rule recommend the 3-day rule? I'm guessing they don't.
No, I actually like to, you know, when people ask me like, well, you know, what does 3-day rule stand for? And I actually say like, oh, have you heard of like, you know, the old saying 3-day rule? It's like, we believe the opposite of that, which is like capitalizing on momentum, not waiting 3 days to let someone know that you like them, or not waiting 3 days to move forward with someone if you feel like there is like a connection. So it's really like the opposite, but it kind of like just pulls into like that thought process of like, this is what it used to be. This is what we're trying to, of course, change in terms of like your thought process and dating.
Culture change. All right. Where can people find you?
Yeah. So in terms of where people can find me, I mean, whether you're looking to get a matchmaker, whether you're looking to do some date coaching, you can do that all on my website. So that's just askanika.com, or you can find me on Instagram, which is at Nika Rashawn. So both of those places, you can find all my links. We can chat about any of the services that I'm a part of or that I offer or the company that I work with on either platform.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you so much.